Chapter 8. Davidson happened to be 2 days late on his return trip. No great matter, certainly, but he made a point of going ashore at once, during the hottest hour of the afternoon, to look for rest. Schomburg's hotel stood back in an extensive enclosure containing a garden, some large trees, and, under their spreading boughs, a detached hall available for concerts and other performances, as Schomburg worded it in his advertisements. Torn and fluttering bills, intimating in heavy red capitals concerts every night, were stuck on the brick pillars on each side of the gateway. The walk had been long and confoundedly sunny. Davidson stood wiping his wet neck and face on what Schomburg called the piazza. Several doors opened onto it, but all the screens were down. Not a soul was in sight, not even a China boy, nothing but a lot of painted iron chairs and tables. Solitude, shade, and gloomy silence and a faint, treacherous breeze which came from under the trees, and quite unexpectedly caused the melting Davidson to shiver slightly, a little shiver of the tropics which in Sourabaya, especially, often means fever and the hospital to the incautious white man. The prudent Davidson sought shelter in the nearest darkened room. In the artificial dusk, beyond the levels of shrouded billiard tables, a white form heaved up from two chairs on which it had been extended. The middle of the day, table d'hote tiffin once over, was Schomburg's easy time. He lounged out, portly, deliberate, on the defensive, the great fair beard like a cuirass over his manly chest. He did not like Davidson, never a very faithful client of his. He hit a bell on one of the tables as he went by, and asked in a distant, officer in reserve manner, "You desire?" The good Davidson, still sponging his wet neck, declared with simplicity that he had come to fetch away Hest, as agreed. "Not here." A Chinaman appeared in response to the bell. Schomburg turned to him very severely. "Take the gentleman's order." Davidson had to be going. Couldn't wait, only begged that Hest should be informed that the sissy would leave at midnight. "Not here, I am telling you." Davidson slapped his thigh in concern. "Dear me. Hospital, I suppose. A natural enough surmise in a very feverish locality." The lieutenant of the reserve only pursed up his mouth and raised his eyebrows without looking at him. It might have meant anything, but Davidson dismissed the hospital idea with confidence. However, he had to get hold of Hest between this and midnight. "He has been staying here?" he asked. "Yes, he was staying here." "Can you tell me where he is now?" Davidson went on placidly. Within himself he was beginning to grow anxious, having developed the affection of a self-appointed protector towards Hest. The answer he got was, "Can't tell. It's none of my business." Accompanied by majestic oscillations of the hotel keeper's head, hinting at some awful mystery. Davidson was placidity itself. It was his nature. He did not betray his sentiments, which were not favorable to Schomburg. "I am sure to find out at the Tessman's office," he thought. But it was a very hot hour, and if Hest was down at the port he would have learned already that the sissy was in. It was even possible that Hest had already gone on board, where he could enjoy a coolness denied to the town. Davidson, being stout, was much preoccupied with coolness and inclined to immobility. He lingered a while, as if irresolute. Schomburg, at the door, looking out, affected perfect indifference. He could not keep it up, though. Suddenly he turned inward, and asked with brusque rage, "You wanted to see him?" "Why, yes," said Davidson. "He agreed to meet, don't you bother. He doesn't care about that now." "Doesn't he? Well, you can judge for yourself. He isn't here, is he? You take my word for it. Don't you bother about him. I am advising you as a friend." "Thank you," said Davidson, inwardly startled at the savage tone. "I think I will sit down for a moment and have a drink after all." This was not what Schomburg had expected to hear. He called brutally, "Boy!" the Chinaman approached, and after referring him to the white man by a nod, the hotel keeper departed, muttering to himself. Davidson heard him gnash his teeth as he went. Davidson sat alone with the billiard tables, as if there had been not a soul staying in the hotel. His placidity was so genuine that he was not unduly fretting himself over the absence of haste or the mysterious manners Schomburg had treated him to. He was considering these things in his own fairly shrewd way. Something had happened, and he was loath to go away to investigate, being restrained by a presentiment that somehow enlightenment would come to him there. A poster of concerts every evening, like those on the gate, but in a good state of preservation, hung on the wall fronting him. He looked at it idly, and was struck by the fact then, not so very common, that it was a ladies' orchestra, San Giacomo's Eastern Tour 18 performers. The poster stated that they had had the honor of playing their select repertoire before various colonial excellencies, also before pashas, sheiks, chiefs, H.H. the Sultan of Masgate, etc., etc. Davidson felt sorry for the 18 lady performers. He knew what that sort of life was like, the sordid conditions and brutal incidents of such tours led by such San Giacomos who often were anything but musicians by profession. While he was staring at the poster, a door somewhere at his back opened, and a woman came in who was looked upon as Schomburg's wife, no doubt with truth. As somebody remarked cynically once, she was too unattractive to be anything else. The opinion that he treated her abominably was based on her frightened expression. Davidson lifted his hat to her. Mrs. Schomburg gave him an inclination of her sallow head, and incontinently sat down behind a sort of raised counter, facing the door, with a mirror and rows of bottles at her back. Her hair was very elaborately done with two ringlets on the left side of her scraggy neck. Her dress was of silk, and as he had come on duty for the afternoon. For some reason or other, Schomburg exacted this from her, though she added nothing to the fascinations of the place. She sat there in the smoke and noise, like an enthroned idol, smiling stupidly over the billiards from time to time, speaking to no one, and no one speaking to her. Schomburg himself took no more interest in her than may be implied in a sudden and totally unmotived scowl. Otherwise, the very Chinaman ignored her existence. As he had interrupted Davidson in his reflections. Being alone with her, her silence and open-mouthed immobility made him uncomfortable. He was easily sorry for people. It seemed rude not to take any notice of her. He said, in allusion to the poster, "Are you having these people in the house?" She was so unused to being addressed by customers that at the sound of his voice she jumped in her seat. Davidson was telling us afterwards that she jumped exactly like a figure made of wood, without losing her rigid immobility. She did not even move her eyes, but she answered him freely, though her very lips seemed made of wood. "They stayed here over a month. They are gone now. They played every evening. Pretty good, were they?" To this she said nothing, and as she kept on staring fixedly in front of her, her silence disconcerted Davidson. It looked as if he had not heard him, which was impossible. Perhaps she drew the line of speech at the expression of opinions. Schomburg might have trained her, for domestic reasons, to keep them to herself. But Davidson felt in honor obliged to converse. So he said, putting his own interpretation on this surprising silence, "I see not much account. Such bands hardly ever are. An Italian lot, Mrs. Schomburg, to judge by the name of the boss?" She shook her head negatively. "No. He is a German really, only he dyes his hair and beard black for business. San Giacomo is his business name." "That's a curious fact," said Davidson. His head being full of haste, it occurred to him that she might be aware of other facts. This was a very amazing discovery to anyone who looked at Mrs. Schomburg. Nobody had ever suspected her of having a mind. I mean even a little of it, I mean any at all. One was inclined to think of her as an automaton, a very plain dummy, with an arrangement for bowing the head at times and smiling stupidly now and then. Davidson viewed her profile with a flattened nose, a hollow cheek, and one staring, unwinking, goggle eye. He asked himself, did that speak just now? Will it speak again? It was as exciting, for the mere wonder of it, as trying to converse with a mechanism. A smile played about the fat features of Davidson, the smile of a man making an amusing experiment. He spoke again to her. But the other members of that orchestra were real Italians, were they not? Of course, he didn't care. He wanted to see whether the mechanism would work again. It did. It said they were not. They were of all sorts, apparently. It paused, with the one goggle eye immovably gazing down the whole length of the room, and through the door opening onto the piazza. It paused, then went on in the same low pitch. There was even one English girl. Poor devil, said Davidson, I suppose these women are not much better than slaves really. Was that fellow with the dyed beard decent in his way? The mechanism remained silent. The sympathetic soul of Davidson drew its own conclusions. Beastly life for these women, he said. Can you say an English girl, Mrs. Schomburg? Do you really mean a young girl? Some of these orchestra girls are no chicks. Young enough, came the low voice out of Mrs. Schomburg's unmoved physiognomy. Davidson, encouraged, remarked that he was sorry for her. He was easily sorry for people. Where did they go to from here, he asked. She did not go with them. She ran away. This was the pronouncement Davidson obtained next. It introduced a new sort of interest. Well, well, he exclaimed placidly, and then, with the air of a man who knows life. Oh, if, he inquired with assurance. Mrs. Schomburg's immobility gave her an appearance of listening intently. Perhaps she was really listening. But Schomburg must have been finishing his sleep in some distant part of the house. The silence was profound, and lasted long enough to become startling. Then, enthroned above Davidson, she whispered at last, that friend of yours. Oh, you know I am here looking for a friend, said Davidson hopefully. Aren't you tell me I've told you, eh? A mist seemed to roll away from before Davidson's eyes, disclosing something he could not believe. You can't mean it, he cried. He's not the man for it. But the last words came out in a faint voice. Mrs. Schomburg never moved her head the least bit. Davidson, after the shock which made him sit up, went slack all over. Hest! Such a perfect gentleman! He exclaimed weakly. Mrs. Schomburg did not seem to have heard him. This startling fact did not tally somehow with the idea Davidson had of Hest. He never talked of women, he never seemed to think of them, or to remember that they existed. And then all at once like this. Running off with a casual orchestra girl. You might have knocked me down with a feather, Davidson told us some time afterwards. By then he was taking an indulgent view of both the parties to that amazing transaction. First of all, on reflection, he was by no means certain that it prevented Hest from being a perfect gentleman, as before. He confronted our open grins or quiet smiles with a serious round face. Hest had taken the girl away to Samburan, and that was no joking matter. The loneliness, the ruins of the spot, had impressed Davidson's simple soul. They were incompatible with the frivolous comments of people who had not seen it. That black jetty, sticking out of the jungle into the empty sea, these roof ridges of deserted houses peeping dismally above the long grass. Oh! The gigantic and funeral blackboard sign of the Tropical Belt Coal Company, still emerging from a wild growth of bushes like an inscription stuck above a grave figured by the tall heap of unsold coal at the shore end of the wharf, added to the general desolation. Thus the sensitive Davidson. The girl must have been miserable indeed, to follow such a strange man to such a spot. Hest had, no doubt, told her the truth. He was a gentleman. but no words could do justice to the conditions of life on Samburan. A desert island was nothing to it. Moreover, when you were cast away on a desert island, why, you could not help yourself. But to expect a fiddle-playing girl out of an ambulant lady's orchestra, to remain content there for a day, for one single day, was inconceivable. She would be frightened at the first sight of it. She would scream. The capacity for sympathy in these stout, placid men. Davidson was stirred to the depths, and it was easy to see that it was about Est that he was concerned. We asked him if he had passed that way lately. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.